This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Wang Shaning. It is 7:06 a.m. Tuesday, the 18th of May. Let's take a look at the markets.
It was a red day over in the US when markets closed a few hours ago. The Dow was down 0.2%, S&P was down 0.3%, and the NASDAQ was down 0.4%. Over in Asia yesterday, a little bit more of a mixed picture. The Nikkei 225 out of Japan was down 0.9%, whereas the Shanghai Composite and the Singapore STI were both up 0.8% at the close. Hong Kong's Hang Seng was up 0.6%, and the FBM KLCI closed up marginally under 0.1%.
So for more insight into global market movements this morning, we are speaking with Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust, a Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, thanks so much for joining us today. So AT&T, WarnerMedia and Discovery have confirmed to be merging in a $130 billion deal. Are incumbents choosing this route to compete against new media and the disruptors?
Well, first of all, it's a big number, $130 billion merger. We haven't seen those in a while. So that's number one. Number two, it's just the entertainment industry, the streaming, the content, it blew out, really grew fast during the pandemic. And this is a way to buy into that growth. So, I don't know specifics of the merger, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is the last one, whether it's in energy, financials, chemicals across the board. It's buying growth. There's incumbents. And in order to be, the incumbents, Netflix and so forth, they have such a powerful market position that you can't do it gradually. You've got to do it very all up front.
Right. And the U.S., speaking of the U.S., the Fed's April minutes are coming out this week. Joe, what key points will the markets be focusing on in this report?
Well, transitory. I'll bet you there'll be some people that just count how many times Jay Powell says that or in the minutes. It's going to be about, kind of the inflationary expectations. And I think the Fed is going to acknowledge prices are rising, but then fall back on that transitory nature narrative. So that's what we expect. And there's still a great deal of debate here in the United States whether that's true or not, because there was a hotter than expected reading for CPI, PCE, and so forth. So, they can't be too dovish, but hawkish would scare the markets as well.
And U.S. retail sales were flat in April after March's red-hot performance. How do you see household spending trends for the remainder of the quarter?
Well, I think they're going to be pretty healthy. I mean, April was flat from March, but March was very robust. So I think, we're going to see a lot more income spending. People are cutting loose. It's summer almost here in the United States. Schools are out. People are traveling. The masks are coming off, so I think we've got $2 trillion in excess savings, so we're going to continue to see a very robust consumer here in the United States driving growth, not just here, but also abroad, vis-a-vis more imports.
Meanwhile, Joe, prices of commodities continue to be on a little bit of a tear, with some saying it's a super commodity cycle creating shortages from chips to lithium. At what point does this put pressure on businesses and their margins?
Well, I would say it's doing it already. I mean, the input costs are rising for home builders, electrical vehicles, chips. We're seeing production slowdowns in the automobile industry. So it's filtering its way through. It doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon. So, maybe it's not as inflationary as people expect, because it could be deflationary in the sense that we're losing output. We don't have all these critical inputs, so we have lost production. That pulls back on GDP. Maybe that makes the Fed, stay the course, and then ultimately we do get this kind of pricing pressure behind us. So it's a very interesting dynamic. But you're right. I mean, it seems everything is in demand and nothing is out there in terms of supply right now, and not enough supply.
Now, there is also some increasing risk on sentiment in EM equities, particularly in Asia. Is this an opportunity to bottom feed in those markets, or should investors stay long in developed markets?
Well, it's a great question, because we've had a lot of conversations with our clients here in the United States who do not have emerging market exposure. So the emerging markets have underperformed really since mid-February, the S&P 500. But I'll be honest with you, it's a hard sell getting U.S. investors, retail investors, interested in the emerging markets, because they hear about the problem with India. They see what's going on with China, with the government crackdown on some big technology names. Brazil, it's kind of floundering with the COVID as well. So, yeah, the natural bias is to stay home. But anyone listening, you should own the emerging markets. And they pulled back here. So you want to buy in a pullback, not when they've run up. So, yes, buy them here. But make sure it's quality. Make sure you've got the right sectors in the right countries.
Joe, speaking of pullbacks, now Bitcoin is now only on 47% up on a year-to-date basis, falling from its almost 100% gains on that level. Now, the crypto frenzy has been compared by some to the dot-com boom and bust of the 2000s. Do you think those comparisons are fair? Are investors essentially chasing a fool's gold?
No, I don't think that's fair because, the dot-com boom and bust, it did shred and destroy a lot of companies. Investors lost a lot of money. But it did lay the basis for kind of the internet boom that followed. But we did create the pipes and the valves and the infrastructure for e-retailing. Then the smartphone comes along and so forth. Jeff Bezos starts Amazon. So there was something to the dot-com boom and bust that was tangible that we could, lift off. I'm not sure that's true for cryptocurrency. What's the actual tangible benefits that we see just yet? Because it's still outside the regulatory reach of the central banks. Yes, there's cryptocurrencies coming amongst digital currencies, central banks. But does it feel a little frothy and bubble-like? Yes, but I think we're seeing that pullback and some of the steam come out of that.
One last question, Joe. Earlier you mentioned when it comes to emerging markets, make sure you are invested in the right sectors and countries. What sectors and countries would those be for you?
I mean, I still like technology for the long term. So whether it's South Korea, Taiwan, semiconductors in Malaysia, Singapore, banks, not much in Eastern Europe, not much, honestly, in Latin America. That's all commodities. I think that fades a little bit here. But longer term, it's China, Northeast Asia, Malaysia, Singapore. Yes, consumer-related companies perhaps in the Philippines and Thailand. But that's kind of the only real emerging markets out there. But, a lot of these emerging market MSCI weight indices, they're 40% or so of China. So you got to recognize what you're buying. China's slowing down, top-down economy. Know what you're buying. But I like, in particular, Taiwan and South Korea.
Thanks so much for speaking with us this morning, Joe. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, giving us some insight into what global markets are doing. Shanning, what were some of your thoughts listening to what Joe had to say?
Hello, guys. Can you hear me?
We can. And for a note for our listeners, you're beaming in over the miracle that is the internet. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, from an undisclosed location in Kuala Lumpur. But it's nice to hear that Joe is a big proponent of emerging markets, even though a lot of his clients seem very nervous about it. They prefer to stay stateside. I guess they are more comfortable with developed markets. But interestingly, he likes South Korea and Taiwan. And for me, that's clearly an indication that, those markets are preferred because of their tech-heavy index, right? That's the way to play it, especially in North Asia. But the other thing he talked about, of course, was the merger of those incumbents, the $130 billion deal between AT&T, Warner, and Discovery. He said they're just basically buying growth and it's too slow to grow organically. I think that's an interesting perspective, but he says probably you won't see such a deal of that size for a while to come.
Yeah, because I'm not sure if there are any other giant media companies left outside of maybe Sony Corp and the other one being Universal in terms of content creators out there. It'll be interesting to see because this is something that with Disney's takeover of Fox assets, that was $90 billion and already it was quite a big deal at that point. No, it was around $72 billion, sorry. This is a $130 billion merger. Warner, AT&T is kind of spinning off their media assets after buying it 2 years ago. I guess that's kind of what happens when you have a change of leadership with different directions at the helm. But this will be an interesting one to see. The US telco giant AT&T has agreed, as we noted earlier, to combine its Warner Media business with Discovery Inc. in a deal to create what they hope to be a new streaming giant. I think people may be familiar with Warner Media, but Discovery has a lot of the cooking and lifestyle shows. I think the Oprah Winfrey show is part of that network as well.
Yeah, so AT&T is going to receive $43 billion in cash, debt securities, debt retention. Its stakeholders will receive stock representing 71% of the new company. I think its CEO, John Stanley, has been unwinding an acquisition spree undertaken by his predecessor. So very interesting to watch this, certainly. Very quickly, another tie-up here between ride-hailing and payments giants, Gojek, as well as e-commerce pioneer PT Tokopedia, that was set to create the largest internet company in Indonesia. And so this new business, which is going to be called GoTo, one of those, would encompass business from car sharing and fintech to online shopping as well as delivery. It's going to be an interesting one to watch. Gojek, we already knew that Gojek had super app aspirations, right? So similar to Grab here in Malaysia. So this is looks like a one step closer to that eventual goal.
Yeah, GoTo will be formed through a deal backed by shareholders including Google and Alibaba, though they did not provide a valuation. And they are betting on a larger size that will help them compete against rivals such as C Group out of Singapore or Grab as these super apps gain more popularity in Southeast Asia. GoTo will reportedly pursue a listing by the end of 2021 with the goal of having its shares traded in both Jakarta and the US. Another note, we did see Grab announce it a few weeks ago, a deal that would see it go public via a SPAC. So a lot of movement happening with these rising internet giants here in the region.
Exciting stuff. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.